Thoughts on it.
Welcome to Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset with your host, Brian Keane.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. We talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode is going to be a Q&A. So I pull questions from my Facebook, my Instagram, and my Snapchat. So if you're not following those platforms, definitely check those out. Brian Keane Fitness on Facebook and Instagram, and BrianK019 on Snapchat. So all the questions that I get from the podcast, I take them from across my different platforms. So first question comes in from Jason Fitzpatrick. How can I build my calves? I feel like I've tried everything. Okay, so building calves is, there's an inside joke in fitness and bodybuilding that they're the hardest body part to build, and genetically, technically they are. You have some high-end competitive bodybuilders who are the size of some small houses that have small calves because of genetics. However, even though it is largely determined by the length of the fibers and the way that the shape of your calves will be down to your actual physical genetics, a lot of people I've found don't train them correctly either. So that can lend itself to them not building. So what I'm going to do is, there's two angles to hit it from. I would try both, see which one you respond to better, and then double down on that one that works. There's a theory that you should go ultra heavy on calf extensions or calf raises, because the theory being that you walk around on them all day, they can handle a lot of weight, and they're only going to grow if you load them with very, very heavy weight. This is kind of the Arnold Schwarzenegger approach. In his book, The Modern Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding, he talks about how he used to do normal 15-20 reps on calves and they never grew, and then he started loading them with massive weight for 6-8 reps and they started to grow. He also used to cut off the bottom of all his trousers, because he had to look at his calves and his what he called skinny calves, and it reminded him to train them every day. So that's one approach. I did trial this and I didn't get any response. I found my calves just didn't engage and they didn't respond in any way, shape, or form. However, what has worked very well for me was keeping more tension on the calf muscles, working for a shorter range of motion, and then mixing normal tempos 2-1-2 with fast speed tempos with the fast twitch fibers in your calves. So how this may look is, one of the systems that I use with guys that come through my top 50 program, particularly guys, because it's mostly guys that try and bring up their calves, even though some girls do as well, is on, for example, a leg press, you're going to do a normal 2-1-2 tempo doing a calf press off a leg press machine, but you're not going to go full range of motion. You're not going to load all the way down to the bottom and all the way up at the top so that you get a break either side. You work within the tension parameters where you're keeping constant tension on the gastrocnemius and soleus, the calf muscles in your calf. So what I would do is I would do 15 to 20 reps like that, and then I do fast twitch pulses, which is like very, very short range partial movements, and just filling the calf with so much blood and lactic acid so that when you get off and you try and stand up, you end up stumbling a small bit because your calves are so burned out. I'll normally do 15 to 20 reps on slow 2-1-2 tempo, and then I'll do 20 to 25 reps or whatever to failure with those fast twitch pulses. My calves grew tremendously when I started applying this 2 or 3 times a week. When I used to compete and when I used to travel the world doing fitness model shows and photo shoots, calves were a body part that obviously they're showing on stage, so I used to train them a lot to try and bring them up, and that really, really works for me. However, just be careful the first time you do it. I remember the very first time that I tried that system, I remember waking up in the middle of the night at about 3 a.m. to go to the bathroom, and I stumbled and fell straight through my bed because my calves completely gave way. So that kind of shows the intensity level and the effect that it can have. And you get so much lactic acid build up, you get so much tension, so many fibers torn, you've got a lot of fast twitch fibers in that area of your body, and if you're using those pulsing reps, it can lend itself to a lot of pain but growth in that area. Again, genetically they're a notoriously hard body part to build, but what I would advise you do is try both of those. Try the Schwarzenegger system where you go super heavy, see how they feel, see if they respond, do it for a couple of weeks, and then try my tension with the pulse reps and see if they respond, and whichever one works better, double down on what works. Things like calves and abs, same with most body parts, but particularly calves and abs, is find the movements and the strategies and the parameters that work for you, and then double down on those movements. Do them more than, if you know that going heavy is not going to work for you, then don't do that. If you know the tension and pulses aren't working for you, then don't do that. You know, if it's a case of spend your time with quality exercises that your body responds to, and you're going to see results faster, particularly with muscles like calves and abs. Okay, next question comes in from Brendan Nannery. Hey, Brian, what's your view on gluten? Okay, so I'm going to come at this one from a couple of different sides because I love the Charlie Munger quote that you shouldn't argue a viewpoint or have an opinion on something unless you can argue that viewpoint better than the people that had that view in the first place. That's kind of how I feel about gluten. I can make high-end pros for it and high-end cons for it. So I'm going to come at it from a couple of angles on this because it's very much context dependent on each person. I think the gluten-free craze that we're starting to come out of now has been absolutely ridiculous. The gluten-free aisles where you get biscuits and things that are gluten-free are basically the same as the biscuits you're eating. They're just replaced wheat flour, which has gluten, contains gluten, with rice flour. They still have sugars, they still have fats, they still have all the additives, they still have all the ingredients, but just because they're gluten-free, people for a while thought that they were quote-unquote healthier when they're not. They're still biscuits, they're still sweets, they're still chocolate, they just don't have any gluten in them. So that trend of gluten-free is healthy, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I think it's just one of those things that got marketed very, very well. And thankfully, people are starting to come around in it now and they realize that gluten-free doesn't equal healthy. Again, what happened, and there's a little bit of a crosswire, was when people cook gluten and they cut out bread and they cut out pasta and they start including more, you know, brown rice or sweet potatoes, slow digesting carbs, they're eating more protein, eating more vegetables, eating more fruits, and their body responds in a positive way from a body composition viewpoint, there was a little bit of a correlation where people were like, oh, it was because I was eating gluten. It's like, it's not because you're eating gluten, it's because you're eating shitty biscuits and eating bread and things like that that may not have been working for your body, maybe causing too much inflammation, and then you switch to more fruits, vegetables, and lean meats, and that's why your body responded. In the case of should people eat gluten to get in shape, it really depends on each person. I think if you're gluten intolerant, I would definitely cut it out and I wouldn't use it. For anyone that is gluten intolerant or a wheat allergy, it's going to send your body into an inflammatory state, which is going to negatively affect your ability to build muscle or lose body fat or mental cognition or performance or health in general. So if you're gluten intolerant and you don't do well with wheat or gluten, I would cut it. For example, I haven't eaten bread or wheat in probably 16 years because I was diagnosed with gluten intolerance at the age of 13 because I kept throwing up every time I ate bread, and I haven't eaten in 16 or 17 years. So I know myself that food's not going to support my body because it doesn't tolerate it. Intolerance means it doesn't tolerate it. Your body goes into an inflammatory state when you consume that food. So if you're somebody that has an intolerance or an allergy, definitely cut it because it's not going to support you in any way, shape, or form in composition, performance, or actual brain function and cognition. However, if you're somebody that doesn't have a gluten intolerance and doesn't have a wheat intolerance and perfectly digests the food, all the food sources, so gluten shows up in wheat, shows up in barley, it shows up in rye, and if you can consume those foods and have no negative effects, then you can definitely factor it into your plan. I've had people come through my Top 50 program. Some have completely cut gluten because they're intolerant or allergic to it. Other people have bread every day for lunch. They'll have whole grain bread, which is a slow digesting fiber, with some tuna or chicken or whatever it is that they find works best for them, and we tailor it around their schedule and tailor around their preferences. And they get into tremendous shape with that. If you go scroll through my social media and see some of the before and afters, some of those people have gluten all the way through their plan. Others have it completely cut, depending on each person's own digestive system and ability to tolerate those types of food sources. So it's very much context dependent on the person. I always feel when people label one thing as this is the only way, nobody should eat gluten, you gotta be very wary of those people. You know, I love the Charlie Munger quote again, that's to the man with a hammer, the whole world looks like a nail. If all you have is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. You know, you need different tools in your toolkit so that, you know, if you have a screw, a hammer's not gonna work on that. The truth is, gluten, for the people that are intolerant, isn't going to work for them. For the people that digest it properly and they factor it into their calories, factor it into their macros and all these other things, and they have a good training program, good supplement plan, good nutritional overall, they're going to get into tremendous shape having gluten in their diet, you know, and it's going to be probably easier for them to stick to if they're able to stick with whole grain bread or whole grain pasta or whatever it is that they're doing, that they're factoring into their overall nutritional plan. So there is no, this is the only way. And if you ever hear anybody saying, well, this is the only way, you have to cook gluten, or you have to train with tension, or you have to do keto, or you have to do if it fits your macros, they're the people that I would very much cut yourself off from the amount of information you consume from them. To the man with a hammer, the whole world looks like a nail. And when you get dogmatic about your approaches, and I've been a victim of this in the past, that I thought, well, this is the only way to do things, when the truth is, there is a second side and an opposite side to nearly everything. There's very few things, with the exceptions of things like fast food and with trans fatty acids, that I can make a positive statement for. However, if I really had to be pushed, and some people are eating very, very clean and they love having a fast food as their takeaway and they're using it very, very sparingly, they're probably going to be able to factor it in. You know, it's very context on each person, even though I personally wouldn't, because I know what trans fatty acids do to the body. They make it very, very difficult to get into fat stores, and they start adding extra walls and layers of fat over your organs, which can make it very difficult to get your body composition down. However, some people that are dieting very hard may factor it in. It may be the thing that keeps them on track. So it very much depends, and gluten is the same. If you have no intolerance and you're able to use it and consume it and enjoy those foods and are making the right choices and you're fitting them into your nutrition, you can include them. If your body doesn't tolerate it, then don't eat it. Next question from Dara McGurn 99 on Snapchat. What are the best supplements for memory? Okay, so before I go into the supplements, because there are supplements I use for memory, very much so, I read a lot of books. I try and read 2 or 3 books every week between audio and physical books, listen to a lot of podcasts. So I try and consume information. It's very important to retain that information, and that comes down to largely cognition and retention and actual memory. So there are supplements I use, and I'll talk about those. However, if your nutrition isn't on point, there's no supplement on the planet that's going to support your body's ability or your brain's ability to retain more information. It's very, very similar. Memory supplements, and the ones that I get into, are very similar to physical supplements like branched-chain amino acids, creatine, beta-alanine. If your diet is poor and you're not eating well, you're not going to have, the supplements aren't going to fill that gap, and they're not going to make the difference. So for people that are going to use memory supplements to help their retention, you need to do all the other groundwork stuff first, making sure you're eating good real foods, you're avoiding processed foods that are going to cause brain fog. If you're intolerant or allergic to foods, for example gluten or dairy, that you know you're intolerant or allergic to, that'll cause an inflammatory state in your body, you minimize or cut these foods, and you make sure that you're eating good amino acids, lean protein, good healthy fats to support brain function. All of that is going to improve memory retention. However, there are certain supplements that can move that from a 9 to a 10, assuming you have your nutritional strategy on point. My favorite go-to ones, and there's probably 3 that I love more than anything else. Number 1 is an extra strength omega-3. Omega-3 has so much studies done on its ability to improve heart health, brain cognition, inflammatory responses in the body, but the way it tends to help with memory is down to the active ingredient, which is DHA and EPA, which I normally say to find about half the dose of the omega-3 capsule. So if you have a 1,000 milligram capsule, you want the EPA, DHA to be about half that, you know, 450 mcgs or 500 mcgs, so that you're getting that amount of EPA and DHA from the omega-3 that you're consuming. And it's because your brain and the way that everything was wired in your brain, I can't remember the exact percentage of a makeup of EPA and DHA within the brain, but consuming these foods and omega-3 supplements can support that amount of liquidity in the brain and your ability to retain the information. So having that and hedging your bets with an extra strong omega-3 can improve brain cognition, it can improve memory, and it can also reduce inflammation in the body, which can help you from a physical and body composition standpoint in terms of losing body fat or building muscle. But reducing inflammation in your brain can also help with the synapses and the dendrites and your body's ability to make those connections. There's a saying in the neuroscience world that the neurons that wire together fire together, and reducing the inflammation in your brain can speed up that process, which means that you're able to retain more information from things that you read and things that you learn. The next supplement I love then is a natural nootropic. So nootropic is kind of a thing that's starting to trend now, and I would imagine over the next 6-12 months you're going to see a lot more of it in the fitness industry, because of the kind of things, the fitness industry goes through fads, and nootropic seems to be the one that's starting to pick up a bit of momentum in the business world and the fitness world for helping people with actually improve their memory and their actual mental and brain cognition output. They're effectively, nootropics translate into smart drugs. However, it's the same as synthetic steroids, the same as normal herbal supplements. They are synthetic versions of nootropics, and there's the organic versions of nootropics. The organic ones that I use, I personally will stay away from the synthetic ones, and I've spoken on other podcasts on nootropics that I personally won't use modafinil or won't use the synthetic ones that you have to get over the counter, purely down to my own body's knowledge and self-awareness that I have a quite an addictive personality, and I think anything that makes my brain fire more is probably going to be addictive to me, so I tend to stay on the organic and the herbal side. So photosensitive serine is probably my favorite nootropic at the minute, in terms of helping my body or helping my brain retain more information. I actually came across it when I was checking out stuff from my GEA program because of its photosensitive serine's ability to reduce inflammation in the body and speed up recovery after hard training sessions. But as I actually started experimenting with it for my GEA Lean Body program, I actually found that my memory retention was so much better. So now I include it. I go on the upper end dose of 200 to 400 mg a day, but I find that it actually helps my body's or my brain's ability to retain the information from books that I read and podcasts that I listen to. So that's why I've kept it in my supplement stack. Even though it was kind of a secondary reason, I primarily tried it to try and reduce the inflammation in my body and speed up recovery, but it actually had the effect on brain and mental cognition because of its effect on your body's ability to wire neurons and retain information when you read something. So that's a staple in my diet right now, and it's probably my favorite. The last one then is Bacopa Monnieri that I quite like. It's quite hard to get. I had to bring it back from the States when I was over, and I got it in Whole Foods when I was in the States. You can buy it in any or a herbal shop or health store in the States. I haven't been able to get it in Europe as easily, but I do find it very, very good. I add it to my green shake in the morning, so I have a green smoothie every morning. Again, it varies. I have the recipe in the phase two of my online program, but there's different variations of greens in there. I have flaxseed oil, chia seeds, whey protein, colostrum, loads of different ingredients that I'll add depending on what I have to do that day. But if I have a day that I'm creating podcasts or writing blogs, or when I was writing the book, or when I'm doing videos and I have to do a lot of actual thought process and pull all my thoughts together before I put it onto a video or put it onto a podcast or put it onto a book, as opposed to just snap Q&As or Facebook Lives that I'm able to react to people, I found that Bacopa Monnieri really, really helps me just formalize my thoughts before I figure out what I want to say, especially in things like writing that don't come as naturally to me. I'm a strong writer. Subjectively for me, I'm a strong writer, but it takes me so much more effort than creating a video or a podcast because my brain isn't able to formulate the thoughts as quickly as I can verbalize them. So when I'm trying to put things on paper, I find it a little bit harder, and I found that Bacopa helps me just get that clearness in my brain that I'm actually able to separate things start, middle, and end when I'm writing. So anyone that's doing essays, doing exams, it's probably one of the best supplements you can get your hands on. I don't use it all the time because it is very potent. I find it has a very, very similar effect to caffeine, except without the stimulant effect. But I do find my brain gets very, very switched on when I have it. One other thing I've been experimenting with recently is caffeine as well, with lion's mane and chaga, which is a mushroom that can help mental cognition. So I'm using, I think, Four Sigma, I think is the name of the brand that I've been using recently. So I've only been experimenting with that over the last couple of weeks. And I've been doing it before videos, doing it before I've been writing, and a lot of extra stuff that I have on the side that I need concentration and focus for. So I've been experimenting with that, but I haven't been using it long enough now to be able to feed back. Again, caffeine is always going to be number one in terms of a performance enhancer, your body's ability to get stuff done and the information you can retain, assuming your nutrition is good and you don't have too much inflammation in your brain. Caffeine is going to help you focus, and you may have an improved memory retention as a result of the increased focus when you're learning the task. Next question comes in from Connor Golden on Snapchat. When was the last time you had fast food? The last time I had fast food, Connor, was probably when I was 19, and I was living in California. I went over on a J1. My first J1 was when I was 19. And when I was traveling the south coast of the States, I was going from San Francisco down to San Diego. I ate a lot of fast food on that trip. However, after that, when I came back from that J1, I really switched into full gear for fitness in terms of the gym and nutrition. Up to that point, I played a lot of football. I was in the gym and I was lifting weights and I was training, but my nutrition knowledge wasn't amazing in terms of knowing what fast food was doing to my body. So the reason I haven't eaten fast food in probably 10 years is down to a knowledge of understanding that the way that trans fatty acids are processed by the body is going to slow down your actual physical performance, your brain performance, and it puts another wall in terms of getting body fat lowered. So in my book, The Fitness Mindset, there's a full section on trans fatty acids and the fatty acids that you should avoid. I've talked about omega-3 and omega-6 and how to get those ratios right, whether you're trying to build muscle or lose body fat. But the one that I've suggested you avoid is trans fatty acids. If you actually saw the chemical makeup of a trans fatty acid, trans is the Latin for opposite side. So when you see the chemical makeup of a trans fatty acid, it actually has an upside down hydrogen ion. It's the chemical makeup of a fatty acid. So what that means is when your body consumes those types of foods, fast foods, hydrogenated oils, your body doesn't understand and recognize what they are. So when you consume fast food and trans fatty acids and hydrogenated oils, they get shuttled straight to fat stores so that they keep your vital organs safe. So what that means is you get this buildup of visceral fat over the organs. So that subcutaneous fat that you're able to pull out, that body fat that you can literally see in the mirror, that's over your visceral fat, which is the fat that's over the organs. Trans fatty acids tend to go straight to those visceral fat stores. So it basically means that when you're trying to get your body composition down and lower your body fat, you have more fat that you need to tap into. So for me, there's a couple of reasons I avoid it. One, that reason, when I need to get my body fat down, I don't want to have so much visceral fat build up from eating too much hydrogenated oils and trans fatty acids. The second side, I know the horrible health implications of eating and consuming those foods and the amount of inflammation it puts into your body, how it can lower the testosterone levels in your body for a guy, it can offset the estrogen levels in your body for a girl, and then the mental cognition and brain fog that comes with it. I know with certain foods like sugars and dairies that if I consume those foods, I'll have a little bit of brain fog and I won't function as well the next day. But if I have trans fatty acids, that 10x's and gets 10 times worse. So that's one of the reasons that I avoid those foods. Again, depending on whether you should eat it and consume it in your diet, it's very much down to you. I literally wrote in the section of the book that whether you include fast food is going to be down to your choice, but here's the information from a scientific point of view and from studies that show and back up what happens to your body when you consume those foods, and then let you make the choice whether you consume it moderately or every week or whatever it is you want to do. But again, it's going to be an education thing. For me, when I found out what was happening on a physiological level for my testosterone, my body fat, my body composition level, and my brain and mental cognition point of view, and for me, it's a no-brainer. I couldn't eat that food knowing what it's going to do to my body. Okay, the next question is a screenshot from Snapchat. What are the best books for mindset? Okay, so there's a couple of books that I really, really like. And again, it's context dependent on what way you're channeling mindset. I'm going to plug my own book here because one of the reasons I wrote it was so that I have a place to send people. My book is The Fitness Mindset, which should be available on Amazon when this podcast comes out. Basically, the whole first section is all on fitness, nutrition, supplements, training, hydration, sleep, all the things that you need to get into incredible shape. The entire second section of the book is all on mindset, everything you need to keep yourself in incredible shape. So the first section is all about the blueprint and everything that you need to do to get into tremendous shape. The way to eat, the way to train, how to get a better night's sleep, all the effects from a physical, hormonal, and physiological point of view to get yourself into amazing shape. The second section is holding it. The reason I wrote the book and I wrote The Fitness Mindset was down to my audience, basically, effectively, it was people, you guys listening to me and watching me that have came through my programs, and my top 50 program is based on getting you amazing shape and showing you the tools, the strategies, the meal timings, the nutritional plans that are going to stick with you long term, that fit into your lifestyle and schedule that you can adapt so that you don't just do a program, get in amazing shape for 6 to 12 weeks and then go backwards. I wrote the book with that premise in mind. So the second section talks about things like your habits, because effectively everything we do, if you can form right automatic choices and get your habits right every day, you're going to get into tremendous shape and hold it long term, and that will transcend into every aspect of your life. Things like finding your why, stress, cortisol, anxiety, worry, things that 99% of us deal with, whether we know it or not, things like day-to-day anxiety, day-to-day worry, stress, cortisol, all of these things that may be the reason that you can't get into amazing shape because your body is constantly circulating levels of cortisol, so you can't build that lean muscle and you can't can, get your body fat down, and then strategies to reduce that so that you're able to apply the principles from the fitness section and get into tremendous shape. And then things like practical life tips and things that I have found have supported me personally and the people that I've worked with, and can move you forward to the next level. So if you're talking about mindset in the context of getting into tremendous shape and having the mindset to keep it, definitely read my book. If it's a case that you're struggling with other aspects of your life in terms of belief within yourself, there's a great book by Tony Robbins called Awaken the Giant Within. That book was one of my favorites for breaking through glass ceilings of my own limiting beliefs. That's one of my favorites in that context. If it's you're struggling to take control of your life in terms of you feel like a victim, that everything happens to you and how you don't know how to respond to it, Jack Canfield's The 20 Success Principles largely talks about taking ownership and how to shift your mindset so that you take ownership for the things that happen to you, and then it basically gives you control of the ship and you can steer it in the direction you want. So again, mindset's a very, very broad topic, and depending on where you're struggling and what area it's challenging to, hopefully one of those three books will work tremendously well. If it's a fitness area and you just want to take control of your life and get yourself into amazing shape and use the things from the fitness mindset to transcend into other areas, definitely check out my book. If it's limiting beliefs that you can't break through those glass ceilings, Tony Robbins' Awaken the Giant Within. And if it's feeling like a victim that life is just happening to you, Jack Canfield's The 20 Success Principles is probably going to be the best one for you. Again, there's loads of other different ones. They're just kind of my favorite ones. And I love Jack Canfield and Tony Robbins' book in particular. They're two of my favorite mindset books. So I would definitely check those out. Okay, a massive thank you to the guys that sent in those questions. So if you're not following my platforms and you want to send in questions for the podcast, just head over to my social media, Brian Keane Fitness on Instagram and Facebook, and Brian Keane 019 on Snapchat. Also, any feedback on the podcast will be amazing. I get so many DMs on Instagram about people telling me about the podcast, how they found it. And guys, I live off that. That's my oxygen. So let me know what you like, what you didn't like even more so, and where I can improve, or what you'd like covered in the podcast. Guys, that's literally what I do. The reason that I record these podcast is down to your feedback and what direction you want me to take it in. You know, leaving people that leave ratings on iTunes, I read all of those ratings, I see what you say, what episodes you like, the Q&As, the solos, the interviews, and I basically do more of whatever it is that you want me to do. So hit me up on Instagram, DM me on Instagram, on my Snapchats where I open up for Q&As. If you've got any feedback on the podcast, definitely hit me up on there too. Or you can leave a rating on iTunes and just tell me what you liked, tell me what you didn't like, leave a rating if you want, and just keep me posted. Because as I said, you let me know what you want, what direction and you want the podcast to go in, what kind of content you want me to cover, what guests you'd like me to get on, and I'm going to get on that and try and support and give as much value to you as I can as a thank you for listening and downloading. So a massive thank you again. Go check out my social media. Any feedback would be great. Thank you to Colm over at Voxonic, who edits and puts together all my podcast episodes. Catch you guys soon.